Well, hi, everybody. This is Orson Welles. Oh, it's April Fool's. It's really Larry Jacobs. How are you today? It's Education, K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening today, April Fool's Day, April 1st, obviously, 2021. Nice to have you here. April Fool, no, just kidding. I'm not going to do that anymore. Okay, it's a pleasure to have you here today. I got my good friend Chris Seeley here going to talk to us. He's from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation. He's the program director for school and justice initiatives. They have some great programs that are available to schools nationwide. They actually work. And he's going to tell you about that and give you all the statistics. You can count this under social emotional learning, that sort of thing. It's really an incredible system. And he'll give you all the details. So he'll be with us in just a second. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. And today being April 1st, the brand new issue of our magazine, Equity and Access, is available now to you. Just go over to ace-ed.org. You'll see the huge icon with the magazine cover on it. Just go over there, click through. It's a wonderful issue. I haven't even read the whole thing myself. It's so new. Okay, and just some great advertisers, some great articles, et cetera, et cetera. All about access and equity in American schools, et cetera, and what we can do to make everything better. Okay, it's our flagship journal. Online, the whole thing is online at the American Consortium for Equity in Education, ace-ed.org, of which we are obviously a part. These podcasts are all archived over there. You can see our, if there's an icon for podcasts, you click through on that, it'll show you our podcast schedule. We change that every week, et cetera, and all the podcasts we have are listed. So go over there, check it all out, and enjoy our new magazine, and please tell everybody about it. They'll really get a enjoyable period of time out of reading it over at ace-ed.org. You're welcome to join with us over there. We'll be happy to send all this to you on a regular basis. We'll send you the magazine, et cetera, other things that we're doing. All right, everything's free for educators, ace-ed.org. Okay, go over there, check it out. Actually, the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, my guest today, they have an ad in there with some great information for you. Okay, it's good stuff. Hi, Chris. Larry's here.
Hey, Larry. How are you doing this morning?
Well, I'm fine. By the way, your shoe's untied. April Fool. Just kidding.
Well, good thing I'm not wearing any shoes because I'm still working from
home.
Yeah,
well, nobody wears tie shoes. They wear sneakers now. So it's not even, and your sneaker's untied. April Fool. Okay, enough of that. All right. How's life in Wisconsin? Was he in Wisconsin today? Where are you?
Nope. In Maryland. I think maybe the last time we talked, I was maybe in Virginia at that time. We finally,
Kind of
jumped around
the
DMV area.
Yeah.
608 is up there. Raised. Yep.
Are you vaccinated
yet? Life
is
good here. Life is good. I am not. You know, I'm in that 16-plus healthier range, so I think I have until middle of April here in Maryland. If I was in Wisconsin, it'd be next week. I think the governor there has everything set up to launch next week at some point for 16 plus, which is good for Wisconsin and other places. My wife has her first shot, and you know, parents are getting through it. My grandma's vaccinated now, and have you gotten the shot yet?
That's good. I'm full. I'm fully vaccinated.
Awesome. That's great to hear.
Both shots.
That's great to hear.
Yeah. You know, there's no difference, obviously, but it makes you feel good, and, you know, you don't want to go – you still got to be careful, okay? There's new strains out there and all this sort of stuff. You don't want to give it to somebody else if, God forbid, you're carrying it. But, you know, it makes a difference. You just feel a lot better and a lot safer. It's good stuff, and I hope everybody takes the time to get vaccinated. I know some people are scared of it or whatever, but there's no reason to be feeling that way. They should get it and get it done, and that's all there is to it. Okay, the program director of school and justice initiatives for the American Psychiatric Association Foundation. That is the longest title in the world. Tell us what you do, Chris.
Yes, I always.
How many letters are actually in that? That's a lot.
Oh, gosh. There's a lot of letters in that, and I'm very glad when people don't hang up the phone when I first introduce myself when they call into the foundation. Yeah. So, yeah. But, you know, kind of my role here at the foundation is really to oversee our mental health public education efforts in both kind of the education or the school setting and then the justice side of things. So, you know, I'm here to talk about Notice Talk Act at school today, but I also, you know, we work within Stepping Up initiative that looks to decriminalize serious mental illness within counties. And I work with the Judges Psychiatrist Leadership Initiative as well, which looks at kind of those leaders in both fields and the exchange of education there. So all really great programs and, you know, more important now, I think, more than ever. And really excited to see what the future holds as we really see kind of this criminal justice reform and how we can shift dollars back into what should be mental health and community mental health services. So, which I think we've talked about before, I think it's needed in the community and in the schools to even meet the demand that we're seeing right now. So I think that's, you know, we can talk all day about education programs and resources, but it does take an investment in the community to really build up the services that are going to be needed. And, you know, really excited about, I'm sure you've heard about 988, you know, launching next year, and the APA, you know, as a whole, along with other, you know, great organizations like NAMI and Mental Health America and so on and so forth, are all really working to push forward so that we even have a better, you know, crisis response for individuals in our community that are experiencing mental health. And that includes youth, you know, as we've unfortunately seen, you know, in the past month or two, even more apparent with the treatment of you know, the young lady in Rochester, New York. And and so there's a, you know, there's a lot of needed reform and training. And we do think that, you know, our This Talk Act at School program can help communities really respond with compassion and empathy to what are sometimes, you know, considered those disruptive behaviors, you know, and we're also withdrawn behaviors. But, you know, I think most of the time those disruptive behaviors, they're met with more of that crime and punishment arm instead of, you know, trying to figure out what's happening, you know, what's going on, what do you need, and how do we help support you? And, you know, I think the foundation is definitely well equipped to help not just schools, but also, you know, police departments as well, better understand how do you respond to youth in crisis, you know.
Right. And the time is now. Obviously, it's top of mind these days with we're right in the third day or fourth day, whatever, of the trial of Derek Chauvin, who allegedly killed George Floyd, which you all had to nauseatingly watch on television, that whole horrible event. Okay. And, you know, so this is top of mind stuff right now. And it's just it's so darn important. And, you know, you used an interesting word. You used the word investment, and that's what this is, okay? Mm-hmm. It costs us a lot more to do the wrong thing than it does to do the right thing. And if we, I'll use the phrase, nip this in the bud, so to speak, and spend the money up front, we're going to spend half as much as what we would if we didn't do the right thing. Okay, it's really that simple, and kind of intrinsically, everybody knows that. Okay, but you just got to keep working on people and making it happen. You know, Chris, we talk a lot about this in a generic format. Give somebody an idea. Let's say they get in touch with you over at psych.org, P-S-Y-C-H, psych.org. Okay, you can go over there. It's the American Psychiatric Association Foundation. That's where these programs rest. Chris, as I said, is the Program Director for School and Justice Initiatives. All right, give us an idea of a program. Like, what would be the challenge, and what would kind of be the program that you guys do that works so well? And we're going to get into that in a few minutes, but just give them an idea.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of times schools are reaching out because they need a little bit of mental professional development, especially, I think, now with the toll of the pandemic, and a lot of schools are getting ready to go back to in-person, and, you know, students have been missed or lost in the shuffle, or, you know, I think a lot of schools are aware that this is going to be impacting, you know, students' ability to focus, their well-being, and so forth. And I think when they're reaching out, they're looking for something that is going to really bring all of the trends that they've done in the past and what they look to do in the future together. And I think that's where our program is really well suited, is that we're not the end-all, be-all of mental health professional development. Just like anything, you know, it's a life learning process. But really what we look to do is take all of the different puzzle pieces that maybe you've put in place, or, you know, whether that's question, persuade, respond, which is a suicide, you know, response training, SOS, which is another suicide response training, mental health awareness, psychological first aid, whatever that might be that you've already brought in, we like to take all of those puzzle pieces together and put it into the framework of Notice Talk Act so that all of the staff members really better understand how to respond when they encounter a student in crisis. What are my right. expectations as a staff member? When a student does need a referral, how do I walk them down to the support services? What if I'm not at school? What do I do then? You know, I think a lot of times what we want to emphasize with the staff is that they need to focus on building relationships, right? You have a support services team, you know, that could include mental health and maybe food assistance, housing, you know, a clothing, you know, closet, depending on what your school kind of has access to. It's not your job to diagnose this student or figure out exactly what's happening. It's your job to build a relationship with this student and notice when they have a change in behavior or when something doesn't sit right, you know, kind of trusting that gut reaction and then starting a conversation with them. And then knowing that there is a team of individuals at your school and not just the support services, but it can be your other staff members that have been trained in the program, right? Hey, I've noticed Larry hasn't been showing up in class. Oh, you've noticed Larry isn't showing up in class. Have you talked to him? No, I haven't talked to him yet. Okay, well, like, you should probably talk to Larry because it's important for us to check in with him, see what's going on, right? So mm-hmm. even that reinforcement that staff can have within that system, and it's not, you know, someone being super critical. It's just saying we care about students, and this is what we should be doing within this Notice, Talk, and Act framework.
And notice, talk, and act. That's really key. But, you know, many of these many teachers are very experienced, have been there for years. Others mm-hmm. are kind of brand new, all right? And people do get set in their ways, and we want newer people to learn the best ways, okay? And when you talk to teachers, or educators, about how all this is going to come together, what's their normal reaction to all this? Is there, I always call it the teacher eye roll, because I used to be one, okay, a teacher, and, you know, you come in with something new, and, you know, here we go again. But this is a little bit different, and times have changed, okay? So how do you start getting the teachers engaged? You know, we have to, the educators engaged. We're talking about student engagement, but we've got to talk about the educators engaged in these programs. What's the normal reaction, and how does it work?
Yeah, I think you bring up a big point about buy-in, and I think that really starts with the administrator, you know, making sure that we have the principal or somebody who's high up within that school or that school district at the classroom training. So, you know, I know we've talked numerous times about the program format, but, you know, it starts with an e-learning module, 30 to 40 minutes self-paced, that it sets a baseline for this classroom training that's tailored for each individual school. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really where that buy-in is really important, right? Because we're talking about skill development, and that's the first face-to-face, obviously virtual right now during the pandemic. But I think it really takes that administrator being there, and we usually open up and have them start the presentation and talk about the why, right? Why did we bring in this training? Why is it so important that every single person, you know, and you kind of hit on it already, Larry, is that it's not just for teachers, right? We've designed this yeah. training to really be for the whole school community, right?
Of course.
Coaches, front desk staff, custodial staff, food service workers, anybody in that school community that can have a touch point with that student. And we want to emphasize that, right? It's everyone has a specialized role, you know, and everyone needs to do that job to make sure that our school functions efficiently. But you want to know what everyone's role here is to know, to talk, and act. And we do that together, right? We need to break down the silos. And I think that buy-in and the why of that administrator, that's what it starts with. And, you know, with any training or I think with anything, you're going to get some pushback from time to time. And I think to your point, especially some of those more experienced, like I've tried to have these conversations and I've, you know, and usually what I try to, you know, do if I'm facilitating the training, Larry, I ask them to give me some examples of how they engage or how they have a conversation with students.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times what we find is that they're not using open-ended questions, right? It's very much like, well, did you have a good
yeah.
weekend? Yep, no. You know, they're asking that basic level. And what we want them to do is to say, you know, we think that you do have this skill set, right? Like, if you've been a teacher for 15 15 years or been a teacher for 1 year, you've been, you've obviously care about students, right? That's a skill set that you've brought to the table. But a lot of times when we talk to these teachers, they've already noticed the changes, right? They that's the skill that they really have already had set. It's really this engagement in what could be sometimes difficult conversations, right? And you never know, and this is what we talk about in the training with the staff, is that you never really know when you're talking to a student, unfortunately, where the conversation might, right? You see a student falling asleep in class, and it could be for a myriad of different reasons.
Oh, yeah.
Of why that
absolutely
might happen, right? It could be, you know, playing video games. It could be, you know, anything. You know, they're just not getting enough sleep, and or mom and dad are fighting all night, right? Like, there's so many different things that could be happening that when you start the conversation,
it's unbelievable.
Sometimes there's, you know, there's hesitation, right, to engage in that conversation or to probe a little bit more, ask the questions. And what we tell them to do is that, you know, you want to ask those questions to a point. You're not an investigative detective, nor are you a pseudo mental health professional, right? You get information to a point, and then you go and refer. You know, you go and make that ask, connect that student, whatever support services that you have at your school. And, you know, I think that's also, you know, a big weight that gets lifted off of staff's shoulders when we kind of explain their role is to walk them to the doors. It's not about whether that student engages. But it's still, I mean, though they're kids, right, they might be youth, they're under the age of 18, it's still their right, I would argue, and whether or not they want to engage in treatment services, right? As a human being, that's even like a philosophy of change,
of course,
right? And so, and I think having the staff members understand that as well is like, your job is to walk them to the door, and your job is going to be frustrating because sometimes you're going to walk them, you know, I kind of joke 15,000 times, right? But it's that, you know, first time that they actually cross the threshold, begin to engage in support services that they're going to see a difference. You might not get to see that, unfortunately, right? That might happen down the road. And that's, you know, that's unfortunate for the staff member, but I think letting them know about that process of what their role is, it lets them know, hey, I don't have to diagnose. I don't have to be the treatment provider, right? I just have to care about my students.
You have to notice and talk and get the process started. The journey of 1,000 miles begins with a small step, as we always like to say, that old early Chinese cliched line, okay? But the thing is, we don't know how long that journey is actually going to take. But if we can just get it started, okay, which is what you said, we're doing the right thing. And as you talk to educators across the country, Chris, and set this up, have any of them really had training in this kind of thing? And I don't, you know, when they were in college and that sort of thing. And if they haven't, and I don't know where does teacher education colleges stand on all this, okay, right now, but the world of teaching has changed. Okay, with the social justice and all that sort of stuff happening, the whole move to equity and better psychological help and all that sort of thing. Have you found that they're like brand new to this?
I mean, I think that's an interesting question because knowing that one in five individuals experience you know a mental health or a mental illness across the lifetime, I would argue that you know. A majority of those individuals probably have had an experience or a loved one have had an experience with mental illness, so it shouldn't be new to them. But as far as the curriculum goes, the training, right, and if you're going to get your bachelor's in education, right, to become a teacher, I don't know if it's heavily emphasized, right?
No, I don't think it is.
I've had actually a conversation earlier this week with a potential partner talking about, you know, how we can work with AmeriCorps and Peace Corps and some of these other, Teach for America who kind of take, those early career individuals and place them in communities that need, you know, support services already, is how do we train them to recognize, you know, this withdrawn and disruptive behaviors and actually have that become a part of their training before they go out into the field. So I know it's shifting in some capacities. Don't want to speak, obviously, blanketly, you know, across the board here. But, you know, I would say that you know, the foundation is also open to looking to partner with those university and training programs and others
to look
at how do we implement, you know, mental health into that curriculum. So teachers are prepared, and educators and those that are going into this school are prepared already with at least a baseline of how to recognize and how to engage. You know, I think that would be absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, schools of education, by their own admission, always work a little behind the times, which is unusual considering medical schools usually work ahead of the times. Okay, but education schools usually work a little bit behind, and they have to realize that there is a real sea change in what education is, okay, and the way you train the teacher. And that's good to know. Again, everybody, it's the American Psychiatric Association Foundation. Okay, so please, you can check that out, psych.org, psych.org, if you want to. You need to check all these out. You know, before, and you said that you usually have administrator introduce the program, but you said that it's tailored to each individual school. How deep does that individualistic tailoring go beyond just that introduction, Chris? Like, for example, there's
a big
difference between a suburban school in Iowa versus an urban school in Seattle, let's say, or wherever, or New Orleans. Okay, big difference, okay? And it's not just that particular administrator welcoming them. How else do you tailor it deeper than, than just that introduction?
It's much deeper, and I think the biggest
That was a loaded question. Yeah, I knew you
right.
did. Go ahead. Yeah.
The resources that are available in the school is probably the biggest difference. And even when you look at a school district, Larry, comparing two middle schools that are in the same school district,
if they're
on separate zip code lines, sometimes that can drastically impact
the
support services that are available as well. And
I didn't have to do the Iowa-New Orleans line. I could have just gone to one particular city. So anyway, you're right. Go ahead.
You could have, yeah. And I think that's where, even when we think about investment at the earlier part of this conversation, that's really – and when we think about schools, it's that investment in the school social worker, the school counselor. You know, we really need to see more of those individuals be invested in, so that we can better respond, especially in those areas that are lacking. And I think, when we look at the difference of the tailorment of the classroom portion, it really starts with our conversations beforehand, especially if a school decides to do a direct delivery where they need a little bit more help and support in establishing those protocols, understanding their resources, whether internal, external. We definitely recommend schools do a direct delivery, which is $20 per staff member, and we spend a considerable amount of time, about 3 hours, with the school spread up across about either 2.5 or 3 meetings. And we get to learn about the school from the student demographics, right? What's the socioeconomic status, free and reduced lunch? What does the community look like? What are some of the traumas that might be happening in the community that are not only impacting the students, but impacting the staff? Right? When you're doing a training, it's not just about the content that you are delivering, it's the people that you're delivering it to. And I think having a better understanding of your audience and what's going to be impactful for them is really crucial to the effectiveness of the training. So we also talk to them about, okay, so what do you think that your students are struggling the most with, right? Like, we talk to them about that. Then we ask them, what is your staff struggling the most with, right? From, either what they can't bring to you or they seem to not be able to have the conversation. And then we ask kind of this mental health team, what do you see as the bigger issues or the biggest takeaway that you want your staff to from this training, right? Some schools, they're referring too much, right? Because they're not able to have the coaching and mentoring conversation before making that act. So we have to, figure out how to train them up in that skill a little bit more than maybe focusing on that referral piece, which is still super important, but they already know how to do that, so we need to focus on that relationship building piece, right? And then we really work on, okay, how do we build this training so that we break down silos? We don't want all the math teachers or all the science teachers sitting together or all the front desk sitting together. We want it all mixed around, right?
Yeah.
We really want established that's everyone's role, and I think adults are the same as kids when it comes to trainings, right? If you have friends in a training, your focus is not going to be as 100% to the content that it might be on other conversations that might get started. So I think we're aware of that. As far as even the curriculum goes, we have trivia questions. We ask the school if they want to add any additional trivia questions that would be related to past trainings, right? I talked about it earlier, right? We want to fit all those puzzle pieces together. So can we do that in the kind of that trivia question training to refresh them about the stuff that they learned in the e-learning module? And then the rest of it is all tailored to the school, from the flowcharts that we develop for the expectations for the staff and crisis to referral to no referral when a student doesn't talk to you, right? And what do you do then? To the resources that are available, right? We've talked about this as the difference, right? But some schools just have a mental health team, right? Other schools have bus tokens available for transportation, or that clothing closet, or food assistance, or they have external partnerships, right, that they can bring to the table. That's a resource that if you let a staff member know that this resource is available as a part of that support services, then if you hear that a student is struggling with that particular need, you're more likely to refer, right? We found that a lot of staff members at this one school didn't know about bus tokens. So that became one of our role plays, right? We do role plays in a classroom portion. We have about 14 that we've created, but we don't tell a school what role play they're going to do. We let them either pick it, change it up, even if it's simple as a name, or we'll work with them to create their own. Then we end the training really with this, I think, opportunity for the school mental health or that support services team to really empower the staff that when they do their job of notice, talk, and act, that there is this positive work that happens afterwards, right? A lot of times staff struggles with confidentiality versus privacy and what that kind of means, and, you know, why can't I know what happened to Larry once I referred him to the support services team, right? I care about Larry. I want to know what happened to Larry, and we appreciate that, and we know that comes from a really good place, but your story, Larry, is your story, right? We're not going to go and tell everybody about what you're doing behind the scenes, and I think helping the staff to understand that, too, is super important to their buy-in to the program. Back to your earlier question as well, is helping them to understand that they're part of this larger system or this larger machine that has to happen, and it doesn't work, right? The go button doesn't start unless they notice, talk, and act, right? They're the linchpin to make this system work, and if they do their job correctly, they're going to make a difference in a kid's life, and that's the important piece.
That is the important piece. I got to tell you, I want you to give it. By the way, I gave everybody the website. I was researching this a minute ago. Okay, the better website than psych.org, if I may, Chris, is APAFDN.org, like APA Foundation, APAFDN.org. You can get there through the other one, but this is a lot easier, APAFDN.org, and I just put that here on the description of the show as well. The psych.org, I just wanted to double-check that as you were talking, and I'm glad I did, APAFDN.org. Statistics, Chris, what are you seeing as a result of the trainings that you've done? Give us some good statistics. Can you do that for us?
Yes, definitely. You know, when we look at the school and whether or not, you know, the staff is actually using Notice, Talk, and Act throughout the school year, we're showing that 91% of the staff are actually engaging in that framework throughout the entire school year, which is really promising, which, you know, I think that's that buy-in that we talk about. But more importantly, you know, we have, I think we're trying to impact school-to-prison pipeline. We're trying to obviously impact the 8 to 10 years that it takes somebody from first signs and symptoms to actual connection to care. And then we also want to see how we're impacting the school community. So we're looking at truancy, discipline referrals, major mental health events, and that support services referrals. And what we saw in six of our pilot sites, and this is an average across those six pilot sites, and I do want to emphasize this is before COVID, because COVID, man, if you want to talk about impacting the ability to even track students or be able to collect data, it definitely impacted that. But what we saw in those six pilot sites on average was about a 70% reduction in truancy, which I think really speaks to the change in the school culture. You know, kids wanting to be there. We saw an 89% reduction in discipline referrals, which speaks to my heart a little bit, just, you know, and I think I emphasized this earlier, and I think you mentioned it, right? I'm distracted by the Chavanaugh case this week, right? There's a lot going on, and I think we can work to really address the school-to-prison pipeline. And to see those numbers in the school, that 89% reduction in discipline referrals, that makes me really excited about what maybe we can continue to replicate. And then we saw a 99% reduction in major mental health events, and those were labeled as suicides.
Did you say 99? Really, did you say 99?
99. Yep, 99%. And I do want to mention that, you know, these numbers were fairly low, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. That's still a life, right? That's still a life that we hopefully have saved or gotten connected. And one school even went as far to provide us with that, you know, they haven't had any suicide attempts or death suicide, but they have increased the number of suicide screens that they've been able to do at this school, right? So we're catching these kids sooner, which I think is really, really important, right? We're getting them to be screened and get them the support services that they need so that the final symptom of depression or some of these other mental illnesses doesn't take hold, right, which is suicide.
Yeah, and,
then,
and by the way, there's been an increase in teen suicide, student suicide, I should say, okay, with the COVID. All right, there has been an increase, and I was just talking to Kathy Hoffman, who's the superintendent of the state superintendent in Arizona, and they're as an example, they're just so concerned, and when there is a suicide, that affects everybody. It obviously affects that child and the family and their immediate friends, but it affects the whole school. All the teachers, a terrible thing. And if we can get this down, okay, that's a miracle thing. So when you say there's been a 99% reduction, a huge reduction in this kind of thing, it's just so darn important. I mean, I can't emphasize that enough. Go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry I interrupted. Just wanted to make that point. Things are going nuts out there with the COVID stuff.
No, yeah, and I think we were seeing a trend through the CDC numbers that was alarming as well, just in general, before COVID. So that's a very promising number, and I hope that trend does continue because we lose out on the potential of those students when we lose their life, and we just can't have that. And then we're also seeing 171% increase in support services referrals. And, I mentioned this. I think that's a really awesome number. And some schools were as high as 425%, you know, a couple of months after the training. And then it dives down a little bit. And then after winter break, it increases a little bit, which is an interesting trend that we're seeing, And then some schools, you know, I kind of mentioned this one school that we did do a training for. They were looking for a reduction in their support services referral because of the number they were getting. They were just overwhelmed, and they wanted their staff to be able to handle some of these coaching and mentoring conversations. So we did see kind of a reduction in some of those, 15 to 20% there. So that's an interesting number when we start to really break down what all of the different schools were looking like. But I still think that 171% increase is a great number. All of these numbers are great, but I'm pausing a little bit on them just because it is, before COVID, we're looking to get back. Obviously full swing into the fall and hoping to replicate and continue to see the numbers.
Replicate. They work. Okay, the system works. Okay, your system works. Your training works. Mm-hmm. Okay, and you can make the system work. Okay, so there's no reason in the world why your success rate is not going to continue. It's just much more needed. Okay, now that COVID has hit, and that's why this is so darn. I have to ask something, and this is I find interesting. It's the American Psychiatric Foundation Association Foundation. Okay, I don't know if you know the answer to this. I know you're fairly new there, but this is a great interest in schools. This is really helpful from these top flight professionals. What got them so interested in this to create these programs? I think it's wonderful. I think a lot of people don't realize they do this kind of work.
I think that's a great point, Larry. And, you know, I am fairly young still at the foundation, but I've been there for 3 years. So I do think I can give a bit of a rundown of
I didn't think
just
we were
our
there
philosophy.
That long. Yeah. Cool. Thanks.
Yeah. Almost 4 years now. It's gone by very quickly, so the American Psychiatric Association Foundation was really started as the philanthropic arm of the American Psychiatric Association, which is the I believe it was the first medical association here in America for psychiatrists, and one of the largest ones as well. And they really saw a need to continue to push public education around mental health and also the growth of psychiatry. So really what our, you know, vision is a mentally healthy nation for all, where you live, learn, work, and worship. So, you know, I think it was about, I think it was in 2002 that we started our efforts in the school-based kind of work. It actually started from a former lineman from the Indianapolis Colts, if I remember the story correctly, who was a board member at the time. And said, hey, you know, based off of the unfortunate tragedies of Columbine and just the trends that they were seeing in America at the time, as early as 2002, that there was a need to train gatekeepers, right? And they saw educational staff members as those gatekeepers. And we have a Center for Workplace Mental Health as well.
Is
absolutely wonderful. So even, you know, and I talk about this with the staff, and their mental health is really important too. And we've worked with the center to develop some resources for staff members. And the center has great resources for during COVID, before COVID, especially for, you know, the cost of depression is just outrageous. We also, obviously, our justice programs, which I've already shared about today. One has been around for about 5 years, another about 10 years now. And we also have a faith-based initiative. We have a faith-based guide. So, you know, a lot of times, in the community, when people have a mental health crisis or a question, they might go to their clergy or their pastor or their priest first, because that's a trusted relationship. And I'm smiling right now because trusted relationships are so crucial. And I think that's what we bring to the table, especially for that staff perspective, is when you can build that trusting relationship. And I mean, how do you become a really good social worker or a good therapist? It's that trust that you can build with your client. And as a clinically trained social worker, that was really important, I think, for these trainings. But we've looked at that across the board for our public education programs, is how do we start to build up that trust so that these conversations become easier, so that we reduce stigma and discrimination for individuals with mental illness. And I do think that there's such a great opportunity right now, Larry, as well, with the American Rescue Plan, you know, $123 billion for schools. And there's a lot of flexibility there. And I think our program, you know, I believe that the pricing is available, that you can bring it in. We could look at the staff mental health. You know, we could really look at a package deal and use those federal dollars to really impact the mental health and well-being, and look to replicate those numbers that I shared, which I think is a great opportunity for everybody.
It is. And, you know, you bring up an interesting point. I do know you have workplace programs. All right. When we talk about this, we always talk about this in terms of the students. All right. The students, I'll call it social emotional learning, social justice programming, mental well-being programs. We talk about that for the students. But we sometimes forget that the school building is a workplace. Okay, and all the stresses and strains of a workplace are within a school building for the people on the faculty and staff. Okay, and I noticed that again. It's apafdn.org, APA Foundation. Apafdn.org. Everybody, if you go over there, you'll see the school programs, you'll see the workplace programs, and like you just said, that's a package that people really need to look at, especially these days. Okay, because you call it mental health. I'm going to say it a different way, say mental well-being. Okay, we got to make sure everybody feels good about themselves and feels good about their place in the world and where they're working and their future, and it's really good. And you guys are really proving yourselves out there, Chris, I got to tell you. Okay, you're doing a great job, man. It's really super.
Well,
how many school districts are you working with right now?
Right now we are just working with L.A. County. So
that's enough.
We've had a lot of conversations actually over the last couple of weeks, and people have been reaching out. I think this is the time. April, May, and June is when people start to prepare for fall professional development before school starts.
Yep.
So we're ready. Please feel free to email me. Hit us up on Twitter, Facebook. I know Larry has shared our website as well. You can find all our information there. So we're ready and ready to help support schools.
I'm going to put your email in here, too. Is that okay? Just to make sure everybody can get it.
Yeah, that's completely all right. Yep.
Okay, cool. I'm going to do that, Chris. And, you know, you're right. The here comes the deluge, so to speak. The kids are heading back to school, and we don't even know what's going to happen with all that. It's going to be a hopefully a good transition, but it's going to be a tough rest of the year, and to bring them back and see what happens. This is great stuff. Thank you, Chris Seeley, as always, my friend.
Thank you, Larry. You have a good rest of your Thursday. Hopefully you don't mess around with any more fools today. I'm the only one.
You ain't no fool, buddy, okay? You take care of yourself, all right? You take care.
Right,
thanks,
Larry.
Chris.
Right.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye. Chris Seeley, everybody. It's C. Seeley, S-E-E-L-E-Y, at psych.org, but I'll put that on the description right here. And it's APAFDN.org. And the time is now. What more can I say? They got a nice body of information inside our brand new issue. It's just up on site today. Equity and Access at ace-ed.org. You'll like what we do. Okay, so go over there. Join with us if you want. We'd love to have you join. We'll just send you information from time to time, etc. Okay, we're not going to sell your information or anything like that. All right, and but you get the magazine when it comes out, etc. And like a lot of other people do, ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks so much for listening, and your shoes untied. April Fool's.